So you know I love you guys a whole lot. I'm serious. And we've been doing this podcast for like several months now. But I want to make sure that you guys are real political nerds.
And you want to sign a blood oath?
Maybe. All that right. was one of my ideas.
Should we be card-carrying podcasters? Because I have my ID right here.
How do we prove our legitimacy?
What do we do? What are
you
talking about?
Well, maybe a trust exercise where we like ask each other some deep questions and try to figure out if we really are politics nerds.
Oh, like a political nerd litmus test?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay. All right. I feel up to that challenge.
All right. Do you celebrate New Year's Day on January 1st or July 1st, the start of the fiscal year?
Oh. Happy fiscal year.
Yeah.
Set off some fireworks.
Yeah. Is it, yes, fiscal year, right?
Yeah, clearly,
yeah.
Obviously.
Okay. Obviously.
Good. Yeah, yeah, I have same. A fiscal year party every year.
Yeah, off the hook.
Party all night.
All right, how about another one?
Do you have more of your children's artwork hanging in your office or various old badges and placards from political conventions you've been to?
Ooh.
Oh, man. That's... Well, I don't have any children.
I know.
Pictures of my dog. Does that count?
For me, I mean, quantity-wise, I'd say it's, sorry, kids. You know, I may have a few more badges.
The McCain-Palin 2008 Wisconsin stop is more important to remember than how much your children love you.
Okay, I have one. So have you ever had a nightmare based in the Joint Finance Committee room?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes, but it wasn't about politics. I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
So do we all pass?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you hadn't caught on yet, this whole strange episode was brought on by the fact that we want to talk about political litmus tests. You know, those issues and stances that politicians take or ask each other to take to prove loyalty to their party's ideologies. So this is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
And you guys passed. So who wants to tell me, and this was another test, why this week we're going to talk about political litmus tests?
Ooh.
Sean?
All right. Well, I think it's interesting to talk about this week because I think Foxconn for Democrats is turning into potentially a litmus test. And it seems like they're on this trajectory of when this Foxconn deal was first introduced, they were kind of like, well, you know, I like it, but I have some questions. And now... if you're a Democrat running for governor, I think it's becoming a litmus test that you must be against this deal. Just look at Tony Evers this week. He released his first radio ad trashing the Foxconn deal. So I feel like, you know, we've seen a bunch of them attacking the Foxconn deal now. So looking at recent press releases from Dana Walks, one of the announced candidates for governor, Dana Walk slams Foxconn deal as more details emerge. Quote, we don't need Chinese-style economics in Wisconsin. And Annie Gronick said recently, told WIS Politics, quote, if I was on the board of the directors and our CEO, Governor Scott Walker, brought me this deal, I would first deny the deal and then I'd fire Scott Walker. So how do you one-up that? You spend money. You spend campaign money on an ad and say, I'm willing to commit this money that you've given to me, donors, as supporters, to go on the air and kind of set down this marker of this is where I'm at, and where Tony Evers is at is attacking the Foxconn deal.
But if everybody who's announced so far, at least, has come out and sort of opposed it at this point, what benefit does it have for Tony Evers, say, to like stake out his territory as like strongly as possible compared to these other people? Are there other people who might be getting into the primary who might be more ambiguous about it? Or is he just trying to like say, well, I'm more anti-Foxconn than you guys are?
I don't imagine that there will be any Democrats in the gubernatorial primary that would be pro Foxconn?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Andy Gronick would be the one who is a maybe, because the thing he brings to the table is, I made my money in business. I know how to create jobs. So here's this big business deal, and promises to create 13,000 jobs. That would be his opportunity to differentiate himself from the field if he wanted to. And he left himself that wiggle room, it seemed like, in the beginning of this deal, where he said, you know, this is, in theory, this is something we should all support. I forget his exact quote, but it looked like something that he could support. And, you know, the party's not there. And it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more party leaders come out and say this Foxconn deal is bad, the more the party, that's where they end up, you know?
Right. It's sort of like the way that these litmus tests kind of evolve is like they're sort of the price of admission. Like you have to say like, yep, I'm opposed to the Foxconn deal. And then you're in, you know,
yeah.
You've got to do that to be part of the apparatus. And then you distinguish yourself on other things. But if you don't say that you're against Foxconn, it's like, oh, you can't, you're not a member of this club.
Yeah, like you might as well not apply. I think Foxconn's interesting because there are other litmus tests that we're all familiar with. When it comes to, you know, party politics, like
the ones where you dip it in the liquid and you tell if it's acidic or basic.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're talking about.
Like when you pour the recall into a mug.
I'm thinking about that one. But this Foxconn's a new issue. You know, Foxconn is a new issue. And, you know, there were sparse details when this first came out. And the more we know, the more it evolves. And so you're seeing a litmus test kind of develop before your very eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think also the bigger a primary you have, the more pressure there is on candidates to take these stands. You know, like in 2014, Mary Burke ran for governor for Democrats, she had a primary opponent, but she didn't have what I think would people would call a serious primary opponent. You know, she was not at risk of losing that primary, practically speaking. And so there was not real pressure on her to run to the left. And this year, you have a bunch of people. We're going to have like 10 people running in the Democratic primary. Maybe there won't be that many in the end, but there are a lot of Democrats running for governor. And so they feel that, I mean, they have to feel that pressure to not be out liberaled in a Democratic primary.
What about on the other side? What are some historical litmus tests that Republicans have to deal with?
Ooh, taxes. Grover
taxes.
Grover taxes.
Yeah. Grover, a well-known Muppet. He likes to be a superhero. He's a clumsy waiter, and he's staunchly against new taxes. Yeah,
Republicans must swear allegiance to Grover.
Grover Norquist, of course, we're talking about, not the Muppet.
Who has
made a name for himself more on a single issue than Grover Norquist? I can't think of anybody. Like, he has created this atmosphere among Republicans where you better sign this pledge that says I won't raise taxes or do not apply, kind of like using what you were talking about earlier, Laurel. I mean, who signed this pledge recently?
Kevin Nicholson.
Ah.
Candidate for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. The only announced Republican candidate for U.S. Senate right now.
Yeah. But he's likely going to face other candidates in that. I mean, Leah Vukmir is going to run. But she hasn't announced yet. But State Senator Leah Vukmir is all but in that race.
Mm-hmm. She's got the backing of Diane Hendricks.
Maybe Eric Hovde is going to run. Mm-hmm. Who ran in 2012. Yeah.
It's interesting to me that Kevin Nicholson signed the Grover Norquist tax pledge because Kevin Nicholson is an interesting character in terms of like litmus tests and party loyalty and party purity. I mean, litmus tests are sort of like they call them a purity test sometimes
sure.
too.
Yeah.
And he used to be a Democrat. So like.
Yes. He spoke at the 2000 Democratic
National Convention. Yeah.
So that's somebody who's a little more Democratic than the average person.
Mm-hmm.
And then he at least registered, or he voted in the 2008 Democratic primary, though we couldn't see his ballot to say exactly who he voted for, but Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were on the ballot then.
Mm-hmm. So him like signing this tax pledge could be seen by some folks as like, I am a true Republican now. I ascribe to these like major tenets of the party.
All right, more. I want more litmus tests.
All right. Well, can I just jump on this? Can I jump on this Kevin Nicholson thing again real quick?
I suppose.
All right. All right.
He's not ready to.
Well, I just want to know. I think the question for him is, can he check all these boxes? Can he pass all these litmus tests when he's got this other big, you know, kind of hole in his background where he he was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. What's a Republican primary voter who has Leah Vukmir, one of the most, like, talk about passing litmus tests, right? For Republicans, she aces them, I guess, if you can ace a litmus test. Are primary voters going to be okay with him saying now, yeah, I'm with Grover Norquist on taxes, et cetera, you name the position, I'm there, when he has this in his background that, yeah, I was also a Democrat?
He did get the backing of the Club for Growth, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting because the Club for Growth is like an administrator of litmus tests,
yeah.
I feel.
Yeah.
You know, in the 2012 primary, they were very hard on Tommy Thompson because Tommy Thompson had a record of – Tommy Thompson, a long-standing Republican in Wisconsin, had a record of raising some taxes when he was governor and growing the size of government. And so even though Tommy signed that Grover pledge, I remember that, mm-hmm. The club wasn't having it, and they ran attack ads against Tommy Thompson.
They didn't like that he supported Obamacare.
Yeah. This year they're okay with Kevin Nicholson saying, I'm reformed now,
yeah.
You know,
they
essentially.
They said that, you know, he convinced them in his interview, I guess, his endorsement interview, those things happen, that his conversion from Democrat to Republican was genuine, and
you used to dip me in some water and I would come up blue, but now you can dip me in there over and over again and I come out like bright red.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they
that's
said
exactly yeah.
A direct quote from their press release.
All right. some more
good question.
I've been honing my interviewing skills.
Oh, I've got one that's sort of I like this one because it's kind of a double-edged litmus test. So this one, the recall, which you alluded to, pouring into a coffee mug.
Yes.
I don't know.
What sort of beverage? If the recall was a beverage, what would it be?
Oh, man. So it would be hot, man. It'd
yeah, hot.
Yeah. Boiling.
like a fireball whiskey.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
Some people love it and want to take shot after shot of it because it reminds them of Red Hots, and then other people are like, nah, I'm not about that.
Yeah, that's like, good. It's hot. It's polarizing.
Yeah, I had too much of that one time. No more, man. Yeah. So when it comes to the recall petition, though, that is viewed as a litmus test. So for Republicans, there are some Republicans, I mean, there are websites out there that like verify the recall. They show you can search there and get a pretty good sample of who signed that recall. And if you sign the recall, you might not get a job in Republican politics, maybe. I mean, there was some controversy a few years ago when a student regent, that was appointed by Governor Walker. It was revealed that he signed the recall petition, and then that appointment was rescinded because you can't do that. That's like that is the definition of a litmus test for Republicans. But then this year you got Andy Gronick did not sign the recall.
He's
How are Democrats going to view
yeah,
that?
Running
yeah.
for governor as a Democrat.
Yeah. So will Democrats don't like it when Republicans view that recall list as a blacklist, but how are they going to view Andy Gronick not signing that?
I feel like I haven't seen a ton about that yet.
No.
Have there been like ads or anything?
There's been no real Democrat on Democrat violence yet on the airwaves. We'll see if that comes out. I mean, if he becomes a front runner and there's like 10 people in the primary, I bet you somebody's going to bring that up.
It's going to happen.
But yeah. that's a sort of thing where he can't go back and retake the litmus test, though.
No.
That's a one-time litmus test.
You had your shot.
Right.
Yeah. It's like Hamilton, you know? He threw away his shot.
I still have never seen
that. I haven't either, but there's like a big song that's like, I'm not going to throw away my shot.
Is it like that Eminem song?
Yeah.
You better lose yourself in the music the moment you own it. You're never going to let it go.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
This is your one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow.
So I thought it was flow.
Opportunity comes once
in a lifetime. Yeah. Yo.
And then he talks about throwing up his spaghetti. Pretty sure that happens in there.
Can I have another? Are we going to move on from the recall?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I just like want to throw in one other thing, interesting tidbit about the recall. I'm curious. Does anybody know if Aaron Rodgers signed the recall?
So, I'm sure that would have been out there. I have not researched it.
Okay.
But he did vote in that election, though.
Yeah.
I read that this week because ESPN did this awesome profile of Aaron Rodgers.
Did he say how he voted?
It mentions
No, but it says he – because whether or not you vote is a public record mm-hmm. in Wisconsin, and he's voted ever since he's been here, including in the 2012 recall election. So that's interesting. So he took a stand one way or another on that contentious – Why, let's see, if you're Aaron Rodgers.
A personal stand.
What would happen if that became public to Aaron Rodgers' popularity? Is he above the litmus test for any party?
He probably is.
sign the recall in Grover's Pledge. And
yeah, remember, we've been through this, guys. He didn't even eat cheese. It's okay.
That's true.
he's an awesome quarterback. It doesn't matter.
He lives in L.A.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, not all the time.
Not all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was just curious. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
Next.
Do voters care about litmus tests?
Good question. So primary voters are more intense voters than general election voters. And so there's a better chance that they're going to care about a litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think it's just in a primary – it's just candidates looking to get any edge they can on their opponents. You know, like I'm gonna nudge you out on this issue where my position is microscopically different than yours. I don't know. What do you think, Laurel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of a primary issue than it is in the general, and that people are more likely to hold candidates to like a specific set of beliefs. Like you have to check all of these boxes, sort of like you were talking about Leah Vukmir, like acing the litmus test. Like I think primary voters have more expectations of like a candidate believing everything mm-hmm. that they believe in this like list of tenets. And then you get to the general and like the way that we understand it is like the general population is more moderate, right? And so they don't necessarily want or care that you meet all of these like party purity tests on one side or the other.
But like what about if you are a like really hardcore voter for some particular issue mm-hmm. and like whoever your chosen party nominates doesn't, you know, check off something for you, like the doesn't come out strong, like say you're a Republican and doesn't come out strongly on abortion or mm-hmm. you know, law and order, or you know, which Law and Order series is the best. That's obviously a litmus test.
Right.
No, but like if don't you not run the risk of like turning off a part of your base if you're not passing a litmus test?
It seems like that's more of a possibility now than it used to be. I mean, there's the litmus test that we've been talking about, and then there's always this outstanding question for a primary voter. Yeah, but when this candidate is up against a candidate from the other party, can they win? You know, mm-hmm. electability is like it covers up all that. You know, you might fail some litmus tests, but if you're electable and you beat the other party, yeah, maybe we'll let that go. But it seems like that electability, is this person electable, seems to be, for some voters, it's less important. It's like we want that purity.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? You got any more litmus tests? Political litmus tests?
I had a thought. Can I just like have this thought? Maybe mm-hmm. this is like very far-fetched, but we're recording this podcast on Friday, and the budget committee is meeting on Tuesday to take up the transportation budget and taxes, the last things of the state budget that are not determined at this point. And there are, like, I feel like there are a bunch of litmus test votes in the rest of the transportation budget.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, or in the rest of the state budget as a whole, let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because the big issues left are, like, new revenue, like new taxes, basically, and cutting taxes, like the vehicle registration fee, the gas tax. Like, they're not going to be voting on a gas tax or anything on Tuesday, but they are going to be voting on the personal property tax cut and how much that's going to be, how much they support, and, you know, the amount of borrowing. And so I think we have, like, a little mini litmus test thing happening on Tuesday.
Transportation revenue. Yeah, now you're speaking my language there.
Yeah, that's a litmus test, right?
I was just watching, because I'm a fun person, I was just watching archive tape from 1995 and 97.
And commenting on the ties.
Yeah, ties.
Bad ties.
Ties were horrible back then. And I suppose in 20 years we'll think our ties now are horrible.
Too skinny, probably.
Probably.
What did their ties look like? I'm imagining a lot of, like,
very busy pattern and wide.
Very wide.
And mustaches were really embraced.
Yeah.
Quite widely back then.
Yeah, my dad had a bad mustache.
Yeah. Okay, so like, raising taxes to pay for roads was, by the mid-90s, it was starting to become like a litmus test. Like, if you're a true conservative, we're against all taxes.
Mm-hmm.
By then, you had people like rank-and-file lawmakers like Scott Walker who were like, you know, this stuff is not a good idea. But they were, at the time, they were still kind of in the minority of Republicans. And a gas tax increase was still palatable to pay for roads. And now Scott Walker is governor. He sets the tone. You know, he creates the litmus test as leader of that party. And the test that he has basically established is, like, if you're against taxes, that means the gas tax too, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm going to veto it if you send me one. So there's an example where, being in power, you get to shape your party's platform. And, you know, groups like Americans for Prosperity kind of rally to your cause and say, like, yes, this is what it means to be a Republican right now. No gas tax, period.
The real question, though, is, did he have a mustache back then?
I don't think Walker had a mustache then.
I don't think I've ever seen a picture of him with a mustache.
There's sort of a famous picture of him from his high school yearbook where he had a mullet. Kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to grow a mullet.
Stylish.
Someday.
That's why I'm growing my hair out.
Because one day
I'm going to come in and have, like, the top of it totally shaved.
Yeah.
And then just have, like, a nice rat-taily mullet coming
Maybe
down.
Maybe get some three lines, like, shaved.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, lightning bolts.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So cool.
Coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Regardless of your hairstyle, you can subscribe for new podcast episodes on iTunes. You can also rate and review the show there. It's on Google Play and plenty of other pod-catching apps. And all of our past episodes are available anytime you want them at wpr.org/politics.